Welcome to SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ McCumber, and every 2 weeks we talk search engine optimization with the world's leading SEO practitioners. We interview a mix of in-house SEO leads from the world's biggest brands and SEO thought leaders, many from leading search technology brands, plus the world's foremost SEO educators. They'll all be lifting the hood on their own SEO journey, as well as sharing the tips and tricks behind how the best and brightest minds in SEO go about their trade of dominating the SERP. SEO nerds, this one's for you. Hello and welcome to another episode of SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ. If you are a regular listener, you've heard this accent. I'm the Aussie guy doing SEO in Texas, and I'm in your ears every 2 weeks talking to the world's leading SEO practitioners, educators, just people who love SEO. And if you listen to this, you love SEO too. Now, today, I've got Greg Brooks from Search Tides. G'day, Greg.
What's up, Russ? How are you?
I'm good. We're going to dig into a very specific topic. We're going to talk about organic search. Is it still a viable marketing channel? You know, who it is for and who it's not for. I think especially as we come into this year, there's a lot of anxiety and unease around what the SERP can look like, SGE, all of these different things. However, before we get stuck into that, I do have to ask Greg one question that we do ask every guest that comes on this show. So Greg, what do you feel is the number one biggest challenge facing SEOs in 2024? Go.
Number one biggest challenge, I'd have to split it into two categories. So if you are in-house at a company, your biggest challenge in 2024, in my opinion, is going to be getting internal buy-in, especially cross-department, and getting resources. The agency side of things, I think the biggest challenge for agencies in 2024, the speed of generating results.
That's very good. Very good. Soft skills, huge. I think like that's a big, very underrated aspect. The best SEOs that I know and that I talk to are the ones that can get consensus. They can build a good business case, and they understand that they don't live in a silo on their own. They need a whole bunch of other people to corral.
Yeah, it's so challenging for a lot of SEOs, and we see it with our clients too. You have to make a case, you have to put a dollar value behind it, you have to get people excited about it, and then all of a sudden there's visibility on what you're doing, and you're like, oh crap, I hope this works. So you have to be extra, extra certain, because if it doesn't work, then you get less respect and you get less resources next time. So how do you work all of that and make people still love you? Because ultimately that's how stuff gets done at a larger organization.
That's really interesting. I had someone say to me the other day, it was a term I hadn't used before, I hadn't heard before, it was social credits. It was like, he wanted me to introduce him to someone, and I'm like, oh, can you tell me a bit more about what it is that you do? And he's like, oh, I get it, you don't want to waste your social credits. Let me explain it to you. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting, but that's a similar thing. Like if you're going to get people on board for an initiative and they're going to go into bat for you, you kind of want to do your best to get a win, or at least be able to come out with some learnings that are going to push the business forward.
Yeah. And ultimately, how do you make no matter what the result is, how do you make the people who you needed to get stuff from, how do you make them look better no matter what? Totally. And so how do you lift them up? I think the big thing is, if you're working with others, and this works with anybody, if you're working with others and they know, when I work with Russ, it's going to be a good result for me independently of what actually happens, then all of a sudden the roads start to clear for you.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I want to talk to that second part you spoke about too, but we'll get there in a moment, because firstly, let's just dig into your own career history. Now, we've had a little chat offline. I know you're from New York. You've been here in Austin as well. We're recording this out of Austin. Tell me a bit about your background. I'd like to know your first marketing gig. What was it?
Okay. First marketing gig was, well, I'll give you the 2 minute background on me.
Go for it.
I loved video games when I was younger. I started playing, believe it or not, internet poker when I was like 17, 18 years old. I did that through college. I did that after college. And then I stopped doing that when some legislation came into the United States. And I got into business with my brother. We thought we were going to solve student debt. We're like, here's how we're going to solve student debt. We're going to go talk to all of these companies, and they're going to give student discounts, and we're going to take 0% cut, and this is going to be the best business ever. And so once that failed spectacularly, I realized that when I tried to explain it to people, they said, so you make college textbooks cheaper for students? And I said, you know what? We should just do that because that seems better. And people think we're doing that anyways. So then we kind of started like a kayak.com for college textbooks, which had some legs, but the end of all of it, I wound up realizing that across these two businesses, I had built up marketing skills. So we started a marketing agency that was more full service in nature. And that was like, man, you know, the world of like polka dot pocket squares and talking fancy and all that sort of stuff, like that's a real thing. So first real marketing gigs were clients in that area, and it was kind of servicing them. However, I then realized at some point that SEO is kind of like the magic component of marketing. People don't know how it works, but they're very excited if you do it and you do it successfully. So then I started taking on individual SEO clients, and like, who did I work with? Shout out to like local businesses in New York and New Jersey and like, you know, who were paying me probably like maximum $1,500 a month, like, and then grinded it up from there.
When you had that idea around the college debt and then, you know, honing in, which is interestingly, like that's how a lot of businesses work. They work as like, it's a big business idea and you try to eat that whole elephant and you realize, actually, I could just carve off that little bit. That's what I do well. What period, what are we talking like? What year? I'm just trying to get a sense of, because I'm also thinking like textbooks, how much of it is online now versus is still hard physical textbooks, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point, Russ. So what year? So I'm thinking, so 2009 was okay. Probably the start of all of this stuff. So this was probably like in between 2009 and 2010,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That gives me a better sense. It's still very textbook heavy at that time. I've just started my MBA and I remember the thick, heavy books that I had to take home. Okay, cool. I see. There's legs on that.
Yeah.
But that got you the marketing bug, which then got you to SEO.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So how did you start learning SEO? Actually, what I'd like to know, you mentioned like seeing that, okay, this is like the magic piece that people don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember one of the first things where you went, hold on, this works? Or one of the first little wins, SEO wins you had early on that gave you that, and like, you know, it's like your first hit of, whoa, that was cool.
I remember it was back during the day of like giant PBNs and private blog networks, and everybody was, I forget what the aggregator was that people were using, but I had like 200 sites. And I was just like, all I need to do is buy an expired domain, build a bunch of links to this website, put exact match anchor text there, and then I get amazing rankings. I was like, oh yeah, no, this is great. And I had those wins build up. And then I remember I had the opposite side of it, which was a client who I had absolutely crushed for. And he came to me and he said, I actually would like to increase budget with you, but I don't know how I would even do that because I don't know what you do. So I was like, oh, this is not a business model that scales. Like, this is something that is amazing for one person to do. Don't worry about it. And then, you know, make a living that way. But like, that's not anything that anybody was ever going for.
Wow. Cool. So then how did you learn SEO? Like, was there anyone that you were looking up to? Were you doing courses? Were you reading books? Like, what was your kind of foray into getting better at it?
Yeah, it's a great question, Russ. It was the beginning. It was SEO through Alex Becker at SourceWave. And then it was also like I was in OMG, like one man gang or machine or something, I don't know. But OMG was another big thing. And then I kind of just had this disillusionment of it all that I was like, this is all trick. There's nothing real and sustainable here. This is just kind of like ride it up, crash and burn, move on to the next thing. But there's results that happen along the way. So what if we can kind of take that and do something more meaningful with it?
Very cool. All right. So then Search Tides. Tell me about Search Tides.
Yeah. Search Tides began in around 2013. Mm-hmm. And it was just a few people at the beginning. And it was it's still a lot of like links through any means necessary, results through any means necessary. And then at one point I started working in a consultatory basis with Derek Wozniak, who is a pretty well-known SEO from at least from that time period, and convinced him to work together on some clients that we brought in and then ultimately partnered up. And the idea was like, we need to build sustainable results for clients. I'll never forget the day that I care about the results you get today and this year, absolutely. But I care way more about the effect that that has 4 years from now. And I realized that the incentives on how we were thinking about things were the complete opposite. We were doing it all wrong. And that was really the big wake-up moment for us, where it was like, we need to create something that gets long-term results. And the reality is there is no secret sauce that gets long-term results. It's actually just doing the really great fundamental things over and over again. And sometimes you allocate more to new things and sometimes you allocate more to old things. So what we kind of really focused in on was deconstructing the Google algorithm. And we were like, how do we actually break this thing down? How do we scan millions and millions of search results pages? How do we break down the algorithm into like, you know, 5, 10, 20,000 ranking factors? How do we see what's most important? And then when algorithm updates come up, how do we know what changed? So if we go and we scan the same search results page and now everything is different, but we're able to catalog all the different characteristics and traits of a web page, now we can see all the stuff that changed a month after an algorithm update happened, whereas everybody else is guessing 6 months later, like what happened. You know, like in January of this year, well, January in 2023, we were making recommendations to our clients around content helpfulness that became public knowledge in August of 2023. And by that time, like, you know, you had the helpfulness update come out, like, you know, depending on which one you want to count, 1 to 3 months later. And we were seeing like doubles in organic traffic because we just from those algorithm updates. And the reason was because we saw it in the data so much earlier. And so really like the ethos of Search Tides was, how do we compete against other really good SEOs? And therefore, and the way to do it is to be adaptive, and it's to be data driven, and it's not to be like hearsay based. And also it's to be able to do things at scale ultimately, because that is what's going to enable a campaign to, like, instead of getting a single, that's what gets a triple, instead of a double, that's what gets a home run. So that's kind of like how we've been thinking about it.
Great. So clearly, like, very methodical, very intentional. Are we talking like a framework, or is it like a software, or is it both, or is it just really clever people using processes? Like, what's, without getting too much into the secret sauce, like, what's the actual background to?
Yeah, no, we can get into the secret sauce. Like,
let's go.
And the reason why is because there's a quantitative and a qualitative. Mm-hmm. So we could give a list of ranking factors to someone and they still wouldn't be able to take the same decisions that we are able to make. So there's obviously like a scraping component to it. And we're part of groups that do this. We're not the only people that do this.
Yep.
There's a scraping component of it. There's an analysis component to it. There's an R&D component to it, where like we have to be testing our theses and our hypotheses. And then there's the functional scaling component to it, which is like, okay, this works. How do we create things? There's no resource for us to go to. We're the ones creating it. So for example, in January, we created 3 versions of like the Search Tides A+ content helpfulness guides. And the first one was literally a 25-page checklist. And it's like, yeah, that there's nothing like that that exists. So we're the ones creating it. And then the second one was 5 pages. And then the third one was a page. And then the first time it took like 8 hours to update a really important page. And then it took 4 hours, and now it takes 20 minutes. So like it's just knowing that the best SEO results are going to come from the effort that's being put in multiplied by if the effort's being put into the right areas.
Cool. So that's a pretty clear like point of difference, a pretty clear value prop. Sure, there's other agencies that scrape and do those sorts of things, but then it's putting, I think a lot of it is like, a lot of it, to be frank, is going to be the communication of that to a client. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, we've got the tech, then we've figured out, okay, well, this is where we're seeing the trends and this is what's going to help. but then connecting the dots between that and having the client understand the importance of those recommendations. Now, how much, talk me through some of that process, getting buy-in from your clients.
Totally. And yeah, and let's take it, and I'll make sure to go in a step further, which is then what happens when they tell you all the stuff that you've determined is really important they can't do? And how do you convince someone that it's important when there's nothing else on the internet that's going to validate what you're saying? And so we have with our clients who have worked with us for over 9 months, all of them, 100% of them are still working with us today. So like at some point, it's a level of trust that gets built. And at some point, we're like the wacky agency that's had all, we've had enough of these ideas that go against the grain of what you could see anywhere, that there's inherent trust that gets built up. It's tough for some clients because it is, you're asking somebody to move a mountain. Like we went to one of our clients 2 years ago and we're like, good news. And this is a really well-known company. We're like, good news. Your entire CMS is killing your SEO and there's one way through and you have to like fundamentally change how you process JavaScript. And they said, well, we're using Rendertron and Rendertron is like SEO friendly and Google says it's okay. And we're like, we know it's wrong. Like even if Google says it's okay and they can do it, they can't do it. And so we're like, hey guys, you have to tell development who somebody made a bet somewhere, somebody convinced somebody somewhere that this was like a huge project worth taking on. And they probably cited the same Google thing that says, yeah, this is totally fine. This is good. They have to be, they have to explain to somebody that they were wrong. And now there needs to be this entire different process being made, entire tech upgrade being made. And what's the evidence? Well, trust these guys because they said so. You know, like so the best we can get is typically we've been right about these sorts of things before. What actually winds up happening is there is just a certain level of pain that creeps up for the client from not having this issue fixed. And it typically gets to a painful enough point where they're like, and we've exhausted enough other options where they're kind of like, okay, this might actually be the problem. What do we do about it? And that's when the speed comes back into play. And that's when the, you know, pitching inside comes to play and you're like pitching inside of a client. And like, yeah, all of those things. There's no like easy way around those things. It's just, I think we had to one of our clients in particular last year, we might have shown them the same problem from literally 25 different angles over the course of 12 to maybe 18 months before there was enough examples of it where it clicked for them. And then it changed everything. And they have like absolutely record years. And to me, that's actually just the price you have to pay to get the change done. Like we're not like, how could we have done it differently? We're like, actually, why should a giant company trust this SEO agency that they need to remake something that is like integral to something that they're making hundreds of millions of dollars from, billions of dollars from? And the answer is they shouldn't. From a business risk perspective, they should not. So it's just like, how do we scratch away at that? How do we scratch away at that? And I think that's the hidden component of client services to what you're saying, Russ. It's like, you can have all of the strategies and advice in the world, but if you're unable to actually get that through and get that change, then it honestly, it doesn't matter.
Just a couple of things you mentioned there just sort of struck a chord with me. You know, with, you know, Google says that this way to render JavaScript is okay. Let me show you a list of all the things that Google says aren't. It won't impact your ranking. But outside of that, just a call back to earlier in the episode, you talked about a big challenge for agencies being clients want results faster, right?
Yeah.
And you've mentioned a couple of things. So one of your clients saying to you a while ago, I don't care what you do for me this month, but I want to know how I'm going to be in 4 years. Firstly, I'll take more of those clients, please. But secondly, just then you mentioned that your clients that have been with you for 9 months because you've had enough. Because, you know, quite often with SEO, whether you're internal or external, you're still building a case for why it's a thing and why it's important to keep putting investment into it. So you do that over 9 months and then they stick with you guys for a long time. So there's some contrasting like elements there at play there. You know that if they stay for 9 months, you're going to keep them because you're able to prove your worth. At the same time, clients these days are wanting results quicker. So how do you vibe with that kind of just, you know, the contrast there?
Yeah, it's a great question. And a funny aside, like one client in particular, I think they're on their like fourth year of working with us or something. They've been impacted by 2 algorithm updates and lost over 70% of their traffic twice.
Oof.
And we've brought them back from both of those.
Okay.
So with the last one being the end of 2023, a lot of helpfulness updates. And like as of maybe like 3-4 months ago, they were at all-time high with traffic and they're, you know, all-time high or higher with traffic. So how do you actually do this? Well, there's really 3 different ways that you can show a client that you mean business and that you're worthy of continuing, especially in an area like SEO, that the conventional wisdom is that it takes a long time. So number one is people inspect what they know how to inspect. So I'm a client. I might not know everything about SEO, but I can judge how quickly you respond to an email. I can judge if you say you're going to do something, do you do it or not? I can judge if there's any spelling errors in any of the things that you send over to me. I can judge if you had a conversation with somebody else that I was privy to, did what you said make sense? Were you able to convince that person? None of those things have to do with SEO, but it's a wonderful opportunity because that means that literally everyone can be good at those things.
Mm.
So that's number one. The second thing is splitting up into your plan into short, medium, and long-term wins.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, you would be better off at the beginning of your campaign focusing 100% of your effort on the shortest term wins that you can get, even though it's going to sacrifice some long-term wins or delay some long-term wins, because what's more important is that retention, because what's more important is you should be secure enough in your product and your service as an agency or as an individual in-house, where you're like, if I could just get the next level of buy-in, that will have a way better result for the company. So that is actually the best thing for the company. That's how you unlock the best result. So focusing on the short-term stuff. And then number 3 is just really good onboarding experience, where, you know, we've mapped out the first 90 days and we've never had a client be able to run as fast as us. So we have all the things that we want to go through. And when you're, you know, you get stuck, we're on a call with you. We don't care how many we're supposed to have scheduled with you. Like when we send over stuff, we don't hear from you. We're following up with you. We never, ever, ever, ever want to appear that we are moving at a slower pace than the client. So I think those 3 things are the things that I would focus on to get to that medium term engagement.
I love that. I love that. And it's interesting, like our framework has evolved a lot over the last couple of years because of exactly that same issue. Whereas we used to, you know, you'd look at 12, 18, 24 month plans and there's all of the stuff that we're going to be doing, which is great if you can get a client who is that engaged that early. But we're on 90 day sprints as well. And it's like, okay, well, how do we get those early wins? How do we build a case for SEO as a thing that is going to move the needle for you? And then you start planning in the mid and long term. But it's so interesting. I've never actually heard someone else phrase it like that. So that's great, Greg. Thank you.
Nice.
Now,
good to hear that you think that way as well.
So this is all great. SEO is wonderful. These are the wonderful things that you're doing. But a big question, which you know we're talking about today, is it still a viable marketing channel, organic search? You know, obviously, this being SEO success stories and this being something we're very passionate about, obviously, we're very bullish on it. But there's going to be lots of people out there saying, you know, half the SERP is going to be taken up by SGE. Everyone else is going to ads, or there's dark social, or there's what my neighbor thinks, or there's all these other different things coming into play. What are your thoughts on organic search? And also, because you've been doing this for so long, I recall in the late 2000s when, you know, there's less ads, people don't trust the ads. Like, if you could rank, it was like a license to print money. You know, everyone's there. There's not the competition for SERP space that there is now. So talk me through why it's still a viable channel now.
I think they would call that leading the witness, Russ.
So
organic search is not always a viable marketing channel for some companies. And there's a few instances where that's new for companies, but for the most part, like, it depends on how far away you are. So I'm just going to talk through a couple different scenarios.
Go for it.
First, I want to talk about SGE. everyone who's freaking out about SGE needs to remember that Google has done one thing since its inception, which is try to figure out ways to keep people on google.com or whatever, as opposed to going off to a separate search results page. So it was just a search results page. Then one day, Google My Business showed up. But what happened? If you were in Google My Business, you had a tremendous amount of disproportionate results. Then one day, rich snippets showed up. All of a sudden, you could be on page one in position eight, and you could be the position zero. So you just leapfrog over everything. What does that mean? It's more winner take all. If you get into the snippet, you get more traffic. Then, you know, one day, people also ask questions showed up. What does that mean? We have clients who are generating hundreds of thousands of visitors per month for single people also ask questions. So that's way disproportionate. Then one day, SGE showed up. So if you think about it, in a line of changes that Google has made to the search results page, they're always trying to do the same thing, which is to keep the person on Google and looking on Google. There are some implications about how this works and what it means. SGE, if you could be one of the citations for SGE, you're going to love the fact that SGE exists. Mm-hmm. And also, we need to understand right now how SGE works. So we did an experiment with this, and we had an event. We do monthly events and monthly virtual events. You can just go by and we talk about, we do a deep dive on a search topic. And what we did, I think 2 months ago or 3 months ago, I don't know, was SGE. And we showed a case study where Derek, who did the research for it, he wanted to build a fun house because he has like a big Halloween house every year. And so he wanted to build the fun house of mirrors. So he was looking up how to build, like what you need to do to build a fun house of mirrors cheap. And SGE was giving him search results that were saying like how to cut wood. And he was like, what does this have to do with the fun house? Well, turns out, or no, how to cut glass. Turns out the best way to build a fun house cheap is to go buy this specific type of glass and cut it yourself at home. So it turns out the best way to get a cheap funhouse is to know how to cut glass at home. So you can get this type of thing and then you can build it. So we're not even capable of fully understanding where SGE is at yet. I would just say that if your entire website is top of funnel information-based content, I would be concerned. I would also know that it is likely that because SGE doesn't even need to consume that, a GPT model can consume that. So, which by the way, all LLMs are also functioning as search engines. So the new opportunity is not necessarily Google. It's we need to start understanding that search engines aren't just Google. They're everything that is an algorithm that gives you an answer to a question or a query that you have. So if you start thinking about it in that, now there's new opportunities that come up too. To answer your question, because I've done so in such an eloquent, short way, you know, non-verbose way, organic search, if you are doing well in organic search, or you have the potential to do well, or you're on the doorstep of doing well, you should be like doubling and tripling down, because the amount of websites that can do well is decreasing because Google wants to trust fewer websites over time, because that's like their whole thesis. If you're very far away in organic search from wins, you're also probably at an earlier stage in your business where there's an opportunity cost of your marketing budget going towards SEO as opposed to another marketing channel. And so if you think about SEO as a marketing channel, it may make more sense for you to go someplace else and spend that money somewhere else. If you're already doing okay in SEO, or you're just a larger business, you have people who own single marketing channels at your company, or you're already generating revenue from this marketing channel, and you should be doubling and tripling down, because the way that every single industry and every single thing impacted by technology always goes is it becomes more top heavy. So you have an opportunity to win more. And in that case, like SEO is a really big opportunity for you.
Interesting. There's been a lot of talk around, you know, those top funnel type, that top funnel content, a lot of it's just rubbish on the SERP anyway. And, you know, that being the most impacted. So anything sort of mid and lower funnel, anything more commercial where people are actually looking to transact or they're looking to get in touch with someone, you know, that's basically not as far as we know it now, that's not where SGE plays. So if you talk about, you know, maybe industries or types of spaces where this is organic search might not be the best channel for you? Are there any that sort of come, you know, top of mind for you where you just think, okay, potentially that in that area, you know, there's other ways to get in front of your market?
I think that in general, the areas that are best for SEO are known markets to the consumer. So if you come up with this really cool new product, it's, I don't know, because otherwise I would have come up with it. Let's say it's a power belt and I have USB chargers on my belt and I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. Nothing like this exists. You would not want to build out an SEO strategy for that product because people are not problem aware. They don't realize that it's possible to have a portable charger around their belt until, assumably, they see an ad from you and they're like, oh my God, I need this right now. And then they buy it. However, if a consumer needs, for example, and this is a classic one, insurance of some sort, mm-hmm. they're like, I know I need insurance. I know what it is. I know conceptually what it is. And now I need to go figure out which insurance is the best for me. That is the flip side. That's a known market. It's being problem aware as a consumer. And that is like fundamental to where SEO performs well in.
Which, to be frank, is how it always has been. If there's demand, SEO is good at harvesting that demand. If there's no demand, well, no one's searching for it. So you need to look for other opportunities.
Yeah. And I am typically against this idea of having these really elaborate top of funnel campaigns that will then lead people into this sphere of becoming a potential customer because you've made them aware of this problem that you're now solving for that nobody else solves for, because it's just way easier to put a paid ad in front of them and be like, hey, do you have this specific problem? Because here's a solution that you didn't know about.
Exactly. And then you're also going to get much quicker, like, you know, customer feedback on whether it is a problem that people are prepared to pay for. So
exactly. Yeah. I think that the big thing that's SEO, we see it as unique to other types of marketing or other types of business because there's an algorithm that changes a couple times a year and we see the results of that. But in reality, the formula to be successful in SEO is the exact same formula to be successful in business and marketing and in life. It's be adaptable. It's be flexible. It's be nimble. It's use data and it's be able to execute at scale. And it doesn't matter what compartment of life we're talking about. SEO happens to be one of the compartments of life, but that's the formula, in my opinion, and it's not humble, for success. And so if you're doing that within SEO, then you obviously need to be, you know, then you need to be executing the same way.
So I get a sense, you know, you it sounds like you think there's a bit of Chicken Little going on of like SGE is going to change. the SEO world is coming to an end. And there's a lot of SEOs out there who are trumpeting, you know, maybe we need to look at other ways to market businesses. Not so much SEOs, to be frank, but lots of other marketers out there who think, and especially a lot of marketers who have not been SEO fans. And I can think of some pretty big influencers on LinkedIn and on Twitter who have been, what's the opposite of a proponent? Whatever the opposite is.
An ass.
Yeah. Like, there's some pretty loud voices on that space saying, you know, we've told you for a while SEO is not a thing. People don't search for things. They ask their friends. They ask their peers. What I'm hearing is that you don't think that they are on the money.
Yeah. To the people who think SEO is dying and SGE is the, you know, the nail in the coffin, I think it's a little bit of Chicken Little.
Yep. Awesome, Greg.
Because people have been saying that, have been saying that for a decade and a half. SEO has been dead. It's amazing how much something can die and then become alive again. It's like the only thing that I know that does it. But it's just incentives. So some people have incentives to speak about things in a certain way. And some people have incentives to speak about something in another way. And some people and everybody's basically making bets based off those incentives. So some people just have the incentive to speak about something in a certain way because they'll get engagement. And that's totally cool. That's totally cool for people to do.
This reminds me of at one of the height of one of the early crypto booms in 2017, when Dentacoin became a thing, and there was this influencer who said he had bought a new Ferrari based on his Dentacoin wins. So of course everyone gets on Dentacoin, spikes, falls, you know, exact same. You know, what's incentivizing these people to say what they say is basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's really funny. Bitcoin's a good example too. There's the website like Bitcoin is dead or something like that. And it's all the times that people said that about. But that's true with everything in life. It's basically people who are going to interact with information and they're going to react really heavy-handedly to it. And the other thing is a problem too, which is you are so muted in your response that you're kind of just ignoring it or blunting it out. The idea that SGE is not going to have a change on organic search is silly. So if you're like, SGE is going to kill SEO, SGE is going to change nothing. Those are kind of both equally ignorant views to have. They're just on other ends of the spectrum. The more nuanced view is that many different things over the last decade and a half have changed in the search results. This is the latest iteration. There will be strategies where you can get a disproportionate amount of victory from this change, the same way that there was with Google My Business, the same way that there was with Rich Snippets, the same way that there was and is with People Also Ask, the same way that there will be for SGE. So it's really about like, how can you be adaptable? How can you lean into this first? So you can't look away because it's scary and you can't ignore it because you think it's meaningless. It's, hey, this is the indicator that there's something changing, as there always are things changing. How do you capitalize on that?
Awesome, Greg. Great conversation. Really appreciate your time. We are going to go into Vox Pop now. So I'm going to fire some questions at you. Quick fire.
Fire away.
And you tell me the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay.
Which previous algo change still keeps you up at night?
None of them.
What is your favorite non-obvious software tool that you use every day to research or execute?
I don't use any, but probably Quora.
Got it. A gun to your head, which do you prefer, content or links?
Links.
What's the most effective link building technique that you've used?
Scalable outreach.
Do you think the skyscraper technique is still relevant today?
No.
What do you love most about SEO?
That it's a game you get to play.
How do you apply? You've actually answered this before. How do you apply SEO principles to your daily life?
I still think it's a game you get to play.
Work from home life or office life or hybrid life? What's your preference?
I think work from home for me.
SEMrush or Ahrefs? Have to choose one. Which is it?
Ahrefs.
And last one, this is for brands. What do you think is the best mix or the best form of SEO team? Having an agency, having in-house, or having a combo of both?
I think it's an obvious answer depending on your scale. The biggest brands, you need both. Smaller brands, you should work with internal first because you have a longer time frame to get results and a lower price point, assumably. And then before that, the smallest brands, it should be agency again. So, because you're just at such a knowledge gap, you need help there. How is that for one word?
That's good. That's good. Take it. Love it. Excellent. Greg, thank you so much. What a great conversation. You know, we dug deep on lots of things around your processes, the way you fell into this. We talked about SGE and you know, the world's not caving in, but I really like your viewpoint around, you know, there's people at every end of the spectrum here. You've got your extremes on nothing's going to change, we're fine, and your extremes at the other end of the world's caving in. Somewhere in the middle there lies an opportunity for people to, like you mentioned too, Google is trying to find more trustworthy sites. It's literally reining in the volume of sites it trusts. So how do you get in that space there? Because the same number of people are going to be searching, but a lesser volume of answers, sites serving answers are going to be there. So how do you get into that group? I think that's a great insight.
Yeah. And I'll leave with two things. First is a shameless plug because we talk about a lot of this stuff on our social media. So you could follow Search Tides on LinkedIn. We do YouTube shorts. If you're sick of seeing my face, get sick or you're about to see it more. And then the answer to your question specifically is Google's perfect website is the Rolodex within a given industry or a sub-industry. So even though you may not be getting rewarded from the search results for writing about certain topics, the perfect website in an industry educates people about that topic or about that subtopic. And if you think like Google's perfect website on the internet is Wikipedia. So how are you the Wikipedia for the small universe and world that you play in? And when I say, how are you the Wikipedia? Yes, I'm talking about content. Yes, I'm talking about links. Yes, I'm talking about entities. Yes, I'm talking about like interlinking structure. Yes, I'm talking about citations. I'm talking about all of those things. And it's totally cool to also wrap in being a business and selling things for profit. So, you know, that is what the winners of today look like. The winners of tomorrow will do that with the human element. And that means they're going to be talking about their own experiences and their own expertise. So I'll leave with one example of how conceptually this happens, because I think it's really important for a lot of people to know and talk about. And we use this one all the time. If you are a pharmacist and someone comes to you in the pharmacy and they say, hey, I just got this prescription for this thing, and you look it up and you're like, all right, it's $500, but here's the catch. I know that there's this generic version that's going to get the same results. Chemically, it's the exact same thing. It's $45. You should just get that. I'm using my expertise to tell you about that. Same thing happens. Person goes in the pharmacist. They say, hey, I have this prescription for this thing. The pharmacist says, you know what? All the doctors always prescribe this thing, but everybody who takes it, they don't get better. And then they come back and then they try this other thing and then they get better. So you should just try this other thing. That's the pharmacist using their experience. And when we talk about content and we talk about expertise, EEAT, like authority and trustworthiness, those are just technical signals. When you're talking about how you can be writing and what you can be writing about, that's what expertise is and that's what experience is. So wrapping all of those things into a bow, that's a framework for what should be living on your website. And then the flip side of it is, okay, well, how do you make that website authoritative and trustworthy? In Google's eyes, it's link-based, which will only become more and more important in the future, because content is getting easier and easier to make good versions of. We say that the cost of content is going to zero. The cost of good content is also going to zero. It's just a matter of time. So Google will then have to wait third-party endorsements, which we all know are links. But good SEOs can put together all of those strategies and then execute them at scale. That's how you win today. And that is also the exact same thing that will take you to victory tomorrow.
Parting thoughts. Love it. What's the best way people can find you if they want to reach out?
You can get in touch with me on LinkedIn. You can fill out a form on the SearchTides website. We have a newsletter that you can follow. We have monthly events that we put on. You can check out our social media, SearchTides, both on LinkedIn and YouTube. And you can just keep your eyes out in the SEO space. I feel like a lot of stuff that we've been doing as an agency, we've been keeping internal and we've been using for us and we haven't really been sharing. But 2024 is going to be a special year for us where we're opening the kimono.
Excellent. Love it. Greg, thanks so much for your time. That's been another episode of SEO Success Stories. Now, if you've enjoyed, I should have said this at the start, I usually do. Please do hit that subscribe button, whether you're in Pocket Casts, Apple, Spotify, wherever it is. You won't miss one of these conversations if you subscribe. They're in there every 2 weeks. If you've really enjoyed it, I'd love it if you wrote us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to this. That would be amazing. I will be back in your ears in another 2 weeks' time. That's SEO Success Stories. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.